together an amazing special on Haiti. You don't want to miss that. Stay tuned.
And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
Estás escuchando KBOO.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm. to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome back to Art Talk Bus Stop, a monthly youth-centered podcast about how artists do the work and make a living. I'm Nicole Cabrera, and we're joined with...
Hi, I'm Erica Thomas, and we have Ayana and Sam joining us today on the podcast. And our guest today is Hagen DeLoss, a.k.a. Gloombones. Welcome, Hagen.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here and answer some of your questions.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Tell us a little more about who you are and what you do in your own words.
Yeah, I'm Hagen, and I go by the pen name Gloombones sometimes. And I do multimedia work. It spans traditional acrylic illustration all the way to video games and just digital design sometimes as well. I've been doing this kind of work for about 8 or 9 years now, and I still enjoy it, but I do currently work full-time for a software company, so it's a little bit harder to work in the actual fun stuff and artwork.
To kick it off, what is the story behind Gloombones? And like you said, sometimes you go by it, sometimes you don't. When do you go by Gloombones?
Mainly online, on the internet, in text only. And for those who don't actually personally know me, they can call me, you know, whatever they want. But the story behind it, I've always loved cartoons, and I kind of really liked the idea of fusing really cute things with really kind of a little bit more, not necessarily dark, but just fusing it with little skeletons and sad characters, and that kind of is the idea behind it, just a fusion of ideas. I just really love like Adventure Time and things like of that sort. And I was lucky enough to work with Cartoon Network on a game years ago, and I just started drawing like cartoons and stuff, and the pseudonym came soon after.
Ooh, that's really cool. You mentioned Cartoon Network. I'm sure that was like a really huge deal to you. How did that opportunity come to you?
It came through a friend. I am part of, Portland has an organization called Pig Squad, Portland Indie Game Squad, and I had been part of that organization for years, just showing up, attending meetings and everything, and participating in game jams. And through that organization, I met a fellow, a group that was working on a Cartoon Network game that they ended up kickstarting, and then collaborating with Cartoon Network and on their next game. So I just became friends with them, and on their next game I did an art test, and they hired me for about 11 months to work on a mobile game.
Can you tell everybody what an art test is?
Yeah, it's when a company doesn't know if they want to hire you or not. So they want to make sure you can hit style. A GDD is a game design document, but it's a style guide, basically. And they want to make sure that every artist that works on that show, that game, that IP can hit that style.
So it's like tryouts.
Exactly. Sometimes it's paid, sometimes it's not.
Oh, interesting. So throughout the years, you've done like a lot of freelancing and commission-based work, and you've also mentioned that you've done like contract and stuff. How do you manage that, and how has that worked out for you financially over the years?
How have I managed it? Haphazardly. And how has that worked out financially? I'm working for a big tech company, if that's any indication of the sustainability of it. To say it's not sustainable, but you do have to be pretty diligent, not only with your bookkeeping, but your self-promotion, your networking. And it's a hustle. It doesn't stop. Depending on how the lifetime of your work, you know, if you have a 10-month contract, sure, you can maybe feed yourself for those months, but you're always looking for the next gig. And it's when I was doing it, I did it sustainably, air quotes, for about 8 years somehow. And I was not making money. I was making ends meet. And it wasn't great. After getting a full-time job, after reflecting on my career, I realized that I had a lot of unhealthy relationships with the artwork that I did, in that a lot of it was very personal, but a lot of it was commercial. And I had to feed myself, but I also had a lot of passion, and I still do. And kind of blurring those, having those lines blur, kind of unbeknownst to me, was very an interesting space. So kind of reflecting on that has been interesting.
You mentioned sort of just being able to make ends meet, and at least like when you mentioned that, I kind of think to your sort of video creation that you made.
You're talking about Cosmic Kid Finds a New Home?
Yes. Is that something that you kept in mind when creating that little story that you posted onto YouTube?
Well, that was definitely a personal piece. And it was really fun to do. I just wanted to see if I could do it. In the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, well, if I do this as a proof of concept, maybe somebody would hire me to do something similar. Not to say that I didn't want to do it just for having fun's sake, because it was really, really fun, and I plan to do more. I do one a year on my winter break.
Before you got on the call, Nicole and I were kind of talking about that video series, and it's kind of like set in the future, and you're following this character while they're trying to find a new planet to live on, basically. Like, they're trying to find a new planet to orbit, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have a style that's kind of playful and fun, and like, it's kind of, you're putting that playfulness up against some like more serious topics. And like in this video series, there's like these eviction bots that are following the characters around. I think it's interesting to put those two, to put something playful in context with something that's like really serious, like eviction. And that's something that a lot of people are dealing with in Portland right now. So how does where you live here in Portland and like the kind of political climate of our town affect your art?
I don't know. As a visual artist, first and foremost, I find so much meaning in my work after I make it. It's a very much a passive brain type thing. And this is probably not traditional, but I don't really like to reflect until afterwards. I find deeper meaning, and sometimes I do definitely want to tackle these social commentary issues. Sorry about Alexa again. Hold on. Yeah, she tells me to take a walk after lunch. I never do. I try to find meaning in my work, but all too often it kind of comes out later and on reflection. It's one of my friends, he goes by Dr. Creature. And he is also a visual artist. He worked on, I think it was called The Shivering Truth. He does stop motion and stuff. He's a wonderful guy. But years ago, he described art as a little alien inside his brain, compelling him what to do. And I loved that. I loved the idea of art as this external force driving forward concepts, and we're just these conduits for it. Like, conceptually, it's just a really interesting visual, and he actually played around with that a lot, which was
that's such a cool, like, contemporary way of thinking about the muse, because it's like, that's the muse is an old idea, and like, people think of muses as being like pretty things over there that inspire us, but like, we're in charge. But actually, like, the origins of that idea is that the muse was in control. But I love that it's an alien in this version.
Yeah,
I think a lot of my more psychedelic work, and by psychedelic I mean visually colorful and dealing with a lot of like interesting dichotomies visually, a lot of that work comes from a place of being inspired by sci-fi and fantasy work. Like, I love Isaac Asimov. He was one of my favorite authors back in high school, and knowing that these kind of stodgy old white guys had this creative outlets, and you know, knowing that everybody has these wonderful imaginative worlds in their brains, and just kind of playfully conceptualizing them without not necessarily giving them a complete world or a complete reason to exist. They can just exist because they already do. They're somewhere within someone. And I can just draw it. I can just animate it and get it out into the world. I think this is just such a lovely idea, and I hope it inspires people. I just wish I could be doing it more right now.
Yeah. More about like your art style and stuff. To me, when I visualize it, I get like this like rush of like nostalgia, because it just brings me back to like a lot of like older YouTube stuff like animators would used to put on there, like demos and stuff. But also on top of that, it also heavily, like, the color scheme and just, like, the storylines that you had, they remind me of Zim Invader. Like, I don't know. I really love that
Invader
show.
Invader Zim's amazing.
Younger, yeah. But, yeah, and I just wanted to touch on your style. Like, how did you make that your own style? Because I know you mentioned you really love Bones, you really love cute stuff and kind of ominous stuff and mixing it all together, but ultimately, like, when did you start making that your own kind of thing?
One of my other friends who's a classic illustrator, she I know that it wasn't, this concept didn't come from her, but she told me the concept where everybody has a number of drawings in them, and once you hit that number of drawings, then everything starts to click into place, and that number is different for everyone, of course, and it's a completely hypothetical number. I really truly believe that as long as you put in the work and you're really diligent about it, you're gonna be a good artist. You're gonna be good at your craft. You don't know what that looks like yet, and that's okay. And it will find you as much as you will find it. I didn't start drawing this way exactly because I said, you know, years ago, I wanna draw exactly like this. That's not what happened. I got hired for a gig. I started drawing a certain way. I actually started liking the work that I did for once in my life. It was actually a really wonderful moment, and I started doing it because I started drawing on the bus. I started drawing on the bus in pen, and I just said, you know what? I'm gonna study comics, and I'm gonna study cartoons diligently, and I'm just gonna commit, and I'm gonna start drawing these forms in a very specific way, and I'm just gonna practice it. And then all of these other elements, I found myself drawing skeletons a lot and hearts and stars and just really kind of analyzing what content I wanted to put into this form. Because, you know, we see all these images and we see all these things and all these people in different styles. And, you know, it's really about who you are and what you want to reflect out into the world. So it was kind of a fusion of all of those things. It found me as much as I found it.
I just want to give our people a chance to ask any questions, if you have any questions so far.
It's not a question necessarily. I just really felt when you say that you find meaning in your art after you've put it out. For me, I'll see like something that I want to do for a long time, and then I'll just try to hurry up and replicate that to the best I can, and then that will be a piece of me after I've had time to reflect on that. So I really liked what you said about that.
First and foremost, art is personal.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's what makes it so incredibly interesting as an industry. So if you say you want to do art professionally, I would encourage you to analyze that, because sometimes it will, the professional sense and what the industry wants you to be really kind of takes over. But to your point, I think art is so incredibly personal, and especially starting out, a lot of folks have put so much pressure on themselves to be a certain way and do a certain thing.
Yeah, or to like find their own style. So like, I was gonna ask, what advice do you have for people that are trying to find their own style?
I have a lot of advice, and a lot of feelings. I don't know if it's correct, but I'll say some words and see if they stick. Because I'm definitely not a official voice on the matter. I would come at it from two angles. Emulation is very important, and it trains your hand. Hands are, they have a passive brain, just like your brain does, like a subliminal brain. And if you tell your hand to draw a certain way, again, it goes back to that number of drawings idea of you have a number of drawings until it starts to click, and you gotta just train your hand. But also, I would come at it from the complete opposite end and say, look, you put enough pressure on yourself just to get yourself fed in the morning and get yourself up out of bed to go to school or whatever. And your passion doesn't need to add to that pressure. So just draw. Just do whatever you want. It'll find you. And kind of coming at it from those two very opposite ends of advice, maybe will help you in pursuing that passion.
Yeah, it definitely sticks.
Yeah. Cool.
How about Sam?
I was going to ask, is there any specific emotions or feelings you like to put into your art that you like enjoy working with?
I really like that question, because I like all forms of emotion. I mean, we're all human. We're all going to have them. So I think that now more than ever, there's just so much upsetting stuff on the news. And it's really hard out there. And if I can put any form of love out into the world, that's what I'm going to gravitate towards. So that's kind of where my mind has been a lot lately. Also along those same lines, I think not necessarily a emotion, but an idea that I want to explore more is being deliberate and compassionate with the way I approach things. So I guess that's not really an emotion per se, but there's so many crazy things going on in the world that it's all the more important to stop and check in with yourself and check in with your heart. Yeah, so I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, I think it does.
I also was thinking about, my gut reaction was to answer it in that I've been thinking about the media I ingest and the music that I listen to and the feelings that I had growing up and as a teenager. And I've really been listening to a lot of the old music that I listened to before, and I was like, well, did I really feel those things, or was I just getting used to feeling emotions in general? and kind of analyzing, like, okay, which bands do I still want to listen to? Which ones are, like, absolutely not? Like, what is this perpetuating? No, thank you. Absolutely not answering your question.
Where did you grow up? And, you know, when did you know you wanted to be an artist? What was your sort of, like, youth like?
I always hesitate to answer this question because my upbringing is really unique and interesting. So you probably will have a bunch of questions. I grew up homeschooled in the mountains near Mount Hood, and I was raised on a fish farm.
Oh.
So I was a little hippie child with a mullet who did gymnastics and wore tie-dye.
Oh.
It kind of makes sense that, like, a lot of your scenes that you produce are future cityscape things, because it's like I can imagine as a kid maybe coming to the city and having that feel slightly overwhelming.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually funny because I never got over my goth phase either. I had a goth phase in high school and it just kind of stuck. I don't do the black eyeliner anymore, but I wouldn't rule it out either.
Do you think that because you grew up in, like, a rural area that and that you were homeschooled, that it led you to become an artist? Because I know, like, your upbringing plays such a key part in your life and how you choose to live it.
That's always a possibility. You can create an identity around anything, and art is a lovely thing to create an identity around. I highly recommend it. but I think all paths can lead to art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about your process and what it's like to create the stuff that you do. I think more specifically, like, your stop motion stuff. I had a look at some of, like, your behind the scenes, and it all just looked like a lot of work. On average, and you also mentioned you do it when you're on break, because, you know, it takes up time. On average, you know, how long does that take, and what does that process look like?
I'm going to first answer that question in a very, like, zoomed out view and then kind of drill down. When I was freelancing, I really quickly realized that deadlines are amazing. Deadlines drive a creative like nothing else does, not even money. It's the deadline. It is that date. Because I know artists that, like, oh yeah, I got paid $5,000 to do this painting, you know, haven't really gotten around to finishing it yet, and haven't gotten paid yet. It's the deadline. So to talk on the stop motion, I am not an animator. I would not call myself an animator because I know animators. And I'm like, I do not know how to do what they do. So that being said, I still animate. And I'm a very kind of goal-oriented animator where I'm like, well, it needs to move, and it needs to move that way. How do I figure that out? But the reason I bring up deadlines is because, specifically with the stop motion, I didn't say to myself, oh, well, I want to do a stop motion, I'll do it whenever I can fit it in. I said, well, I've got this full-time job now, but I get a week off of work, or actually 10 days off of work during the holidays. I am going to do a stop motion in that time. And that is what I do. I set out to do that, and that gives me a very clear set of time, so then I can bracket out my agenda and say, okay, well, I'm going to do pre-production before the 10 days. So I know kind of general direction, where I'm going, what I'm doing, what my script is. Then finish up my script, because it all kind of happens in any production, no matter if it's like two people or, you know, 40. It will happen organically because it has to happen because you got a deadline. And you've got a shot that you need to do, and there needs to be clouds moving, and you just need to get it done. So yeah, it's a lot of work, but if you're diligent about setting up your timeline and just saying, okay, well, I'm just going to go for it, you'll get it done.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting how you mentioned deadlines. I think for myself, I think a deadline has to be set from someone that isn't myself for me to actually, like, you know, gonna get this done. Because anything like very like a personal project of mine, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get this done this week. It's not gonna happen. But if someone is like, Nicole, I need you to do this by X, Y, and Z, and I'll have that done before that time. But I think it's interesting that you mentioned that. But
yeah, well, like anything, it's a muscle. So if you get into the routine of setting yourself deadlines or, you know, that idea of saying, oh, well, I'm going to tell a bunch of people that I'm going to do it, so that holds me accountable, varying degrees of success on that one. For me, it works, but for other people, I get it. Like, it might not stick.
Who do you consider your public for your art? Like, who's your audience?
Anybody that watches it. I am kind of averse to looking at that now. And that leads into a completely different discussion on relationship with social media.
Oh, okay.
But from last I looked, my demographic was people in Portland between the ages of 25 and 40. That's it. Uh-huh. But I don't look at that stuff anymore because it's bad for my brain.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think we should just all, like, just detox from social media. Everyone delete it all at once.
If only. Take that, Facebook.
Yeah. Ooh. I just want to hand the mic back over to our students.
I was interested in, you said you worked on games before. Can you name some?
Yeah, of course. My most recent game that I co-created was called Plunge. It's a turn-based dungeon plunger. We released for Switch and what other platforms? We were actually initially going to hit mobile, but then the Switch came across our plate and we were like, oh yeah, let's do that. And we just never got a mobile port out, which sucks because it's actually it started as a swipe-based mobile game, but it's for PC as well. I did the Cartoon Network game is a really, really small game, so it's actually nothing to write home about. It's called Clarence 30 Days and 7 Seas, and it's I don't know if you're familiar with the IP Clarence. It's just this little cartoon kid that hangs out. I don't know. And they in one of the episodes they had a turn-based like board game where they would roll dice and move on a board. And anyway, we made a game out of it, a mobile game. So Clarence 30 Days and 7 Seas. I also worked on a mobile game in 2015 called Skullduggery, and I was one of the background artists on that. I did some concept art for that as well. But in the 8 years that I freelanced, I would say 2 years right out of college, I was doing 3D work for design visualization. Then I kind of went into the mobile game scene, and then I started getting really lazy about getting contract work. So then I started doing a bunch of Instagram, like really quick turnaround illustrations. And then I just got a full-time job because I went kind of broke.
Hagen, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask the students?
Do you see yourself pursuing art as a career?
I know I do, for sure.
In what capacity?
I have one project that I kind of started. I haven't come up with a name, like an official name, but they're pears that look melted, and they're called Strange Fruit. Okay, context. So there's this movie called The United States versus Billie Holiday. That movie is really good, and so it was inspiration for my sticker and her song Strange Fruit that, you know, talks about lynching. Mm. That was my inspiration, and I would like to raise awareness around that. That's where my sticker came from.
That's wonderful. That sounds like a really, really cool project.
Thank you.
Sam, what about you? You want to answer the question?
I don't think I could do it as a career just because I dabble in so many different things in art and outside of it. I don't think I could truly just go in one way with it.
Yeah, it's really hard to restrict yourself.
Yeah, I think I find myself in the same boat as Sam, Like, I often, like, enjoy doing a lot of different types of, like, art and art making and just a lot of creative stuff, which I think I've talked about this with Erica before, where I really enjoy sort of the managing and the producing type titles. And if I did, it would definitely be one of those titles because I get to oversee lots of different projects and be able to dabble here and there. So, yeah, it's kind of where I see myself.
I would definitely encourage jams, any kind of jam, game jam, video jam. I don't know if that's a thing. I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
Those industries are always looking for people to kind of manage the day in and day out at work. So
that's cool. Wow. Never had that come across on this podcast. So it's cool to learn about that. But now that we're wrapping up, what kind of advice would you have for just any upcoming artist or, like you said, someone who wants to balance out an art career and also have a normal day job?
Don't stop. Keep doing it. Don't be so hard on yourself. It'll be okay.
Yeah, very straightforward. I like it.
Self-care, man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am honored, and it was a privilege to speak with all of you, so thank you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Have a lovely
afternoon.
Rest of your day.
Bye.
I am Dr. Demento. I am here in a land of happy, freaky people. KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience produced at a different location every week. Hello, hello, I'm Daniel Tong of Terrascope Radio, a class of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And today on Sprouts, we have a great episode in store for you guys. This year's Terrascope Radio class went out and interviewed our peers, professors, family, and friends to learn more about biodiversity, climate change, and having hope in the face of the environmental crisis. First off, we're going to be listening to At Our Hands, Humans and Biodiversity Loss. Let's take a listen.